Imagine trying to describe a game without using examples. Chess? Cards? Hide and seek? What single feature unites them all? This seemingly simple challenge reveals the revolutionary insight at the heart of Wittgenstein's masterwork. Language isn't a perfect mirror of reality with words simply naming objects. Instead, it's a diverse collection of tools we use to navigate our shared human experience. When a builder calls slab, they aren't merely naming an object, they're requesting action within a specific context and social practice. Words function like tools in a toolbox. A hammer, saw, and screwdriver look similar when lined up, but serve entirely different purposes. Our confusion begins when we try forcing all words to work the same way. Consider how differently "no" works in "I know it's raining" versus "I know how to swim." The surface grammar appears identical, but the underlying uses couldn't be more different. One expresses factual certainty, the other practical ability. By examining these everyday distinctions we typically overlook, Wittgenstein shows how philosophical problems often arise not from profound mysteries, but from language going on holiday, being removed from its practical contexts where it actually makes sense. What makes something a game? Chess and poker share rules in competition, but differ in skill versus luck. Soccer and catch share a ball, but have different structures. Games vary in amusement, skill requirements, and competitive elements. Yet, we use game without confusion. Wittgenstein calls these overlapping similarities family resemblances, like siblings sharing different parental features. Games share various characteristics without any single defining trait. This challenges the philosophical quest for essential definitions. The concept game has blurred edges. When does play become a game or sport? Is professional wrestling more game or theater? Yet blurred concepts remain useful. Just as an indistinct photograph can identify someone, imprecise concepts serve our daily needs. When explaining game, we provide examples to guide recognition through similarities and overlapping features, not to reveal some hidden essence. Could you invent a language only you understand? If you marked S in your diary for a sensation, how would you later verify you're using S correctly? Whatever feels right would be right, meaning there's no standard of correctness at all. Consider this. Everyone has a box containing what they call a beetle, but no one can see inside others' boxes. If beetle functions in language, it couldn't refer to the thing in the box. That object would drop out of the language entirely. This challenges the idea that meaning could be fundamentally private. Words gain meaning through public use, not mysterious inner connections to sensations. Pain language doesn't begin with naming private sensations, but with natural expressions, like crying, that evolve into verbal ones. "I'm in pain" functions as a sophisticated form of crying, not a description of some inner object. The sensation isn't exactly a something, but not a nothing either. We've simply rejected the misleading grammar that portrays sensations as hidden objects that words somehow magically attach to. Look at the famous duck-rabbit drawing. First you see a duck, then suddenly, without the image changing, you see a rabbit. Saying "it's a rabbit" reports a perception, while "now it's a rabbit" expresses a dynamic change in how I see the unchanged drawing. This perceptual shift feels hybrid, both visual experience and thought act. We experience similar phenomena when cloud formations become recognizable shapes or constellation patterns emerge from random stars. The aspect change combines reporting a new perception while acknowledging the object's physical constancy. Could humans exist who fundamentally lack the capacity to see something as something else? Such aspect blindness would be analogous to lacking musical ability or color perception, not just failing to interpret, but unable to experience the fluid nature of perception. This phenomena reveals something profound about human understanding. Seeing aspects requires mastery of techniques and conceptual frameworks, the capacity to shift between different ways of organizing visual experience. It's not just about what enters our eyes, but how our minds interpret what we see. What happens when you suddenly understand something? Wittgenstein challenges the assumption that understanding is a specific mental process like hearing or feeling pain. While sensory experiences have clear beginnings and endings, understanding develops gradually and manifests in our ability to apply knowledge. When a student grasps algebra, their aha moment isn't understanding, it's their subsequent ability to solve new problems correctly. The exclamation, "Now I know how to go on," expresses confidence based on practical mastery, not guaranteed success. Consider learning to ride a bicycle. You know you can do it because you're actually doing it successfully, not because of any mental process. Understanding manifests in practice, in our ability to apply rules appropriately and recognize patterns. This has profound implications for education. Teaching should focus on practice and application rather than transmitting mysterious mental content. Understanding isn't hidden inside the mind. It's demonstrated through what we do and how we navigate new situations with skill. When reading poetry with feeling, words seem filled with meaning, unlike during mechanical recitation. Yet this sense of meaningfulness is figurative. Meaning remains rooted in use and context, not in the isolated word itself. Meaning is not an experience, nor is intention. Mental pictures when planning to visit a friend aren't the intention itself. Similarly, intention doesn't accompany action. When reaching for a cup, there isn't a separate mental act of intending to reach alongside the movement. Finding the right word involves comparing subtle differences through observable behaviors, expressions, gestures, and tone changes, not through mysterious internal processes. When poets labor over word choice, this process manifests externally. This perspective liberates us from the misleading picture of meaning as something hidden inside us. Words derive meaning from how we use them in our shared forms of life, not from mental content. Philosophy articulates what we tacitly know but rarely examine, questioning assumptions rather than making absolute assertions. The declaration, "But it must be like this," has no place in philosophical discourse. The most significant aspects of reality often remain hidden due to their simplicity and familiarity. Like fish unaware of water, we fail to notice what constantly surrounds us until our usual thought patterns are disrupted. Philosophy aims for clarity where problems dissolve rather than get solved. This dissolution occurs when we recognize that many philosophical problems stem from misunderstandings about language. The real achievement is gaining the ability to stop philosophizing when needed, to give philosophy peace from its self-questioning. There isn't one philosophical method, but multiple approaches suited to different problems. The ultimate aim is to show the fly the way out of the fly bottle, to help ourselves escape conceptual traps created through language misuse. In freeing ourselves from these linguistic confusions, we gain a clearer view of how language shapes our understanding, finding liberation from unnecessary questions.